we can have an industry that's built around traditional culture, what a win that is. You know, we've been promoting this as an opportunity for remote communities, for the social benefits and so on, and to have it recognised widely in the mainstream as something that has genuinely got legs is really good news.
How well known is Gubbinge around Australia and also internationally?
Well, look, it's very well known in Broome. It's been known here for thousands of years, and the local people, it's very much part of their culture. I think slowly and surely it's got more and more known around Australia and internationally as well. And this followed a natural resource expo in Anaheim, California, a couple of years ago, where it won the best new product. So it's slowly and surely gaining momentum, you know, and international recognition.
The Vogue website refers to it as Gubbinge, a.k.a. Kakadu plum, which, of course, is the Northern Territory name for the fruit. Could you think that having two different names could be confusing for consumers?
Yeah, well, it is. It's been a little bit of an issue as the industry developed, is what's the best thing to call it. I think the name Kakadu plum was coined as a marketing name. Gubbinge, of course, is the traditional name in parts of the Broome area. Although there's other Aboriginal names across its range, so probably, you know, if you look closely at it, I think there could be 10 or more different names across its range. We regard Broome as the heartland of Kakadu plum or Gubbinge. Here is where it grows very well and where it's highly prized as a food. So the fact that it's getting recognised by its local traditional name, I think, is good.
The product on the Vogue website is being sold in the powder form. What opportunities are there for processing locally?
There's huge opportunities, Tom. At the moment, the fruit is harvested from the wild. There's a small amount of fruit being produced from a cultivated plantation, but it's shipped to other parts of Australia as a frozen product, where it is then put through milling machines where the seed is separated, then it's put through freeze dryers and then turned into powder. So if that processing, the milling of it, can be done here and then the freeze drying can be done. Actually, I've just been talking to people about the prospect of establishing a freeze dryer up here, and you know, freeze drying is a specialised process, but if there was a plant put in place here, it could also be used to freeze dry other fruits that are grown here, things like mangoes and bananas, and it can link in with other opportunities around the horticultural industry.
I think you're getting sort of up to around $40 a kilo for frozen Gubbinge, but the powder form is selling for $23 for 50 grams, so it seems like there's a massive opportunity.
Oh, definitely, Tom, and also the fact that we have to pay the freight on the fruit, you know, when it's in its full state, from one side of the country to the other, so there's many benefits. The frozen product is about one-tenth the weight of the fresh product, so the freight charges are enormous, so yeah, certainly a great deal of value adding can occur if the processing is done on site.
So the Bidjadanga community became the first to harvest a commercial Gubbinge crop last month. How is that going?
Well, it's going very well. I mean, we're hoping that the result of that harvest will promote and inspire, you know, more work in that area. As farmers everywhere know, that it's all work. We've got to put a fence up, we've got cattle coming in there. We do. Irrigation's a big part of getting the good crops because the wet season is pretty sporadic at the moment. So there's lots of things we need to do to produce this, but, you know, it's all very doable. So with horticulture and agriculture in the north now being in the focus a bit more, that people can look on this and get behind it as a real genuine opportunity with multiple benefits.
How do the vitamin C levels in cultivated Gubbinge compare to wild Gubbinge?
That's a good question, but we've found a preliminary answer to that a few years ago when we had some analysis done, and we found that there was virtually no difference. Really, in the cultivated plantations at this point, really all we're doing is providing water, which is what the tree would get in the wild if it rained. So we're just working with the natural requirements, not doing anything too different to that.